and closing the gap. The giant, darkly countershaded dolphin seemed tireless. His breath condensed in high vertical spouts like small rockets of fog as he plowed ahead through the water. Aki's breath was ragged, and he felt weak with hunger. He cursed in Anglic and found it unsatisfying. Playing over a resonating obscene phrase in primal Delphin helped a little. He should have been able to outdistance Cathar John, at least over a short stretch. But something in the water was affecting the hydrodynamic properties of his skin. Some substance was causing an allergic reaction. His normally smooth and pliant hide was scratchy and bumpy. He felt like he was plowing through syrup instead of water. Aki wondered why no one else had reported this. Did it only affect dolphins from Calathea? It was one more unfairness in a series that stretched back to the moment he had left the ship. Escaping Cathar John hadn't been as easy as he expected. Heading southeast, he should have been able to veer right or left to reach help, either Hikahi and the crew at the Thenanin wreck, or at Toshio's island. But every time he tried to change course, Cathar John moved to cut the corner. Aki couldn't afford to lose any more of his lead. A wave of focused sonar swept over him from behind. He wanted to curl up into a ball every time it happened. It wasn't natural for a dolphin to flee another for so long. In the deep past, a youngster who angered an older male by trying to copulate with a female in the old bull's harem, for instance, might get thumped or raped, but only rarely was a grudge held. Aki had to stifle an urge to stop and try to reason with Cathar John. What good would that do? The giant was obviously mad. His speed advantage was lost to this mysterious skin itch. Diving to get around Cathar John was also out of the question. The Stenos Bredonensis were pelagic dolphins. Cathar John could probably outdive anyone in the Streaker's crew. When next he glanced back, Cathar John had closed to within about a kilometer. Aki warbled a sigh and redoubled his efforts. A line of green-topped mounds lay near the horizon, perhaps 4 or 5 kilometers away. He had to hold on long enough to reach them. Chapter 53. Moki. Moki drove the sled at top speed to the south, blasting its sonar ahead like a bugle. "Calling Haoki, calling Moki, this is Herka Pete. Come in. Verify, please." Moki tossed his head in irritation. The ship was trying to reach him again. Moki clicked the sled's transmitter on and tried to talk clearly. "Yes! What you want?" There was a pause, then, "Moki, let me talk to Haoki." Moki barely concealed a laugh. "Haoki, dead. Killed by intruder. I'm chasing now. Tell Takata Jim I'll get to them." Moki's Anglic was almost indecipherable, yet he didn't dare use Trinary. He might slip into Primal in public, and he wasn't ready for that yet. There was a long silence on the sonar speak line. Moki hoped that now they'd leave him alone. When he and Haoki had found the Baskin woman's empty sled, drifting slowly westward at low power, something had finally snapped within him. He had then entered a confused but exalted state, a blur of action, like a violent dream. Perhaps they were ambushed, or perhaps he merely imagined it. But when it was over, Haoki was dead. And he, Moki, had no regrets. After that, his sonar had picked up an object heading south, another sled. Without another thought, he had given chase. The sonar speak crackled. "Herka again. Moki, you're getting out of Caesar range, and we still can't use radios. You are now given 2 orders. First, relay a sonar speak message to Cathar John, ordering him back. His mission is canceled. Number 2, after that, Turn around yourself. That's a direct order. The lights and dots meant little to Moki anymore. What mattered were the patterns of sound that the sled sensor sent him. The expanded hearing sense gave him a godlike feeling, as if he were one of the great dreamers himself. He imagined himself a huge katydid, a sperm whale, lord of the deep, hunting prey that fled at any hint of his approach. Not far to the south was the muffled sound of a sled, the one he had been chasing for some time. He could tell that he was catching up to it. Much farther away, and to the left, were two tiny rhythmic signals, sounds of rapid cetacean swimming. That had to be Kathat John and the upstart Calathian. Moki would dearly love to steal Kathat John's prey from him, but that could wait. The first enemy lay dead ahead.
Moki, you copy me? Answer! You have your orders! You must!
Moki clapped his jaws in disgust. He shut off the sonar speak in the middle of Herka Pete's complaint. It was getting hard to understand the stuck-up little petty officer anyway. He had never been much of a Stenos, always studying Kanik with the Tersiops and trying to better himself. Moki decided he would look the fellow up after he had finished taking care of his enemies outside the ship. Chapter 54 Kipiru. Kipiru knew he was being followed. He had expected that someone might be sent after him to keep him from reaching Hikaki. But his pursuer was some sort of idiot. He could tell from the distant whine of the engines that the Finn's sled was being driven well beyond its rated speed. What did the fellow hope to accomplish? Kipiru had a long enough head start to make it within sonar-speak range of the Thenanin wreck before his pursuer caught up. He only had to push his sled's throttle slightly into the red. The Finn behind him was spraying sonar noise all over the place, as if he wanted to announce to all and sundry that he was coming. With all his screeching, the imbecile was making it hard for Kipiru to piece together what was going on to the southeast. Kipiru concentrated and tried to block out the noise from behind. Two dolphins, it seemed, one almost out of breath, the other powerful and still vigorous, were swimming furiously toward a bank of sonar shadows 50 kilometers away. What was going on? Who was chasing whom? He was listening so narrowly that Kipiru suddenly was yanked back to the present and had to veer to avoid colliding with a high seamount. He passed on the west side, banking hard to sweep past by meters. The mountain's bulk momentarily cast him into silence. "Where shoals, child of Tersiops?" He trilled a lesson rhyme, then switched to trinary haiku. "Echoes of the shore are like drifting feathers dropped by pelicans." Kipiru chided himself. Dolphins were supposed to be hot pilots. It was what had won them their first starship berths over a century before, and he was known far and wide as one of the best. So why were 40 knots underwater harder to handle than 50 times light speed down a wormhole? His thrumming sled left the shadow of the seamount and came into open water. East of southeast came a faint image gestalt of racing cetaceans once again. Kipiru concentrated. Yes, the one in pursuit was a Stenos, a big one. It used a strange pattern of search sonar. The one in front... It has to be Aki, he thought. The kid is in trouble, bad trouble. He was almost deafened as a blast of sound from the sled behind him caught him directly in a focused beam. Kipiru chattered a curse glyph and shook his head to clear it. Tempted to turn around to take care of the self-sucking turd swallower behind him. Kipiru was tormented by a choice. Strictly speaking, his duty was to get a message to Hikaki, yet it went against everything inside him to abandon the Midi. It sounded like the youngster was exhausted, His pursuer was clearly catching up. But if he swung to the east, he would give his own pursuer a chance to catch up. But he might also distract Katha John, force him to turn around. It didn't become a Tarragon's officer. It didn't reflect Kanik. But he couldn't decide logically. He wished some distant great-great-grandchild of his were here now, a fully mature and logical dolphin who could tell his crude, half-animal ancestor what to do. Kipiru sighed. What makes me think they'll let me have great-grandchildren anyway? Finally, he chose to be true to himself. He banked the sled to the left and pulled the engine throttle one more notch into the red. Chapter 55 Charles Dart. One of the two earthlings in the room, the human, rummaged through dresser drawers and distractedly tossed things into an open valise on the bed. He listened while the chimpanzee talked.
The probe is down below 2 kilometers. The radioactivity is rising fast, and the temperature gradient, too. I'm not sure the probe will last more than another few hundred meters, yet the shaft keeps going. Anyway, I'm now positive that there's been garbage dumping by a technological race, and recently, like hundreds of years ago.
That's very interesting, Dr. Dart.
Really, it is. Ignacio Metz tried not to show his exasperation. One had to be patient with chimps, especially Charles Dart. Still, it was hard to pack while the chimp ran on and on, perched on a chair in his stateroom. Dart went on obliviously.
If anything made me appreciate Toshio, as inefficient as that boy is, it's having to work with that lousy dolphin linguist, Saud. Still, I was getting good data until Tom Orley's damn bomb went off, and Saud started hollering stuff about voices from below. Crazy bloody Finn.
Metz sorted his belongings. Now, where is my blue land suit? Oh, yes, it's already packed. Let's see. Duplicates of all my notes are already loaded aboard the boat. What else is there?
I said, Dr. Metz.
Hmm? He looked up quickly. I'm sorry, Dr. Dart. It's all these sudden changes and all. I'm sure you understand. What were you saying? Dart groaned in exasperation.
I said, I want to go with you. To you, this trip may be a form of exile, but to me, it'd be an escape. I've got to get out to where my work is.
He pounded the wall and showed 2 rows of large yellowed teeth. Metz thought for a moment, shaking his head. Exile? Perhaps Takata Jim looked at it that way. Certainly, he and Jillian were like oil and water. She was determined to set in motion Orly's and Crydike's Trojan seahorse plan. Takata Jim was just as adamant resisting it. Metz agreed with Takata Jim, and had been surprised when the lieutenant meekly resigned his acting captaincy at the ship's council meeting, appointing Jillian in command until Hikahi could be recalled. That meant the seahorse scheme would go forward after all. Streaker was to begin her underwater move in a few hours. If the ruse was really to be tried, Metz was just as happy to be gone from the ship. The longboat was spacious and comfortable enough. In it, he and his notes would be safe. The records of his special experiments would get to Earth eventually, even when... If Streaker was destroyed trying to escape... Besides, now he could join Denny Sudman in examining the Kikwi. Metz was more than a little eager to get a look at the pre-sentience.
You'll have to talk to Jillian about coming with us, Charlie.
He shook his head.
She's letting us take your new robot with us to the island. You may have to settle for that. But you and Takata Jim promised that if I cooperated, if I kept quiet to Toshio earlier... and was willing to give you my proxy on the council.
The chip lapsed when he saw the expression on Ness's face. Charlie's lips pressed close together, and he got up to his feet.
"Thanks for nothing,"
he growled as he went for the door.
"Now, Charlie!"
Dart marched out into the hall. The shutting door cut off Metz's last words. The chimp walked along the sloping corridor, head bowed in determination.
"I gotta get out there," he grumbled. "There's gotta be a way."
This ends side 1 of cassette 8.